The following episode of The Love Bomb is brought to you by Spoke. It's a new free listening app from SiriusXM.
The following is an at-will presentation.
Adopted magic, magical ploppet 39. Numerically, inked in skin, reminding me everything is going to be okay. Better than flashbacks of shared yesterdays, almost better than, but not nearly as good as today. Evolved 39. 3 + 3 + 3 = 9. License plates, doubles, kill troubles, suit jacket, covered puddles. 39, 39, Trinity. Holy, sacred divinity. A best friend in me that asks for nothing in return except to be seen. A lover, an almost mother. Fruit and vegetables uncooked, emotionally raw. Food from the seed to the feed. Jamie. Graber, grab her, who grabbed first. Junkie for sensational bursts. Giuliano. Me, 19, butterfly clipped, avocado, bee pollen, college dropout, what do I know? Took me in. Angel's wings, wedding off and start again. Psilocybin, mango, daydreams, and Zanzibarego. Sir, big sir, sure, big cliff, doing yoga, map held upside down. Excuse me, sir, are we going the right way? I'm not sure we ever went the wrong way. Photographic journalers, I'm sure, I hope those pictures exist somewhere. I put that spoon there. Scorpio. Red-headed hair, eye squint, devilish snark, opposite of powerless. El Diablo de Verde, eyes reddish. Look up at the stars in a tent, tell me what's better than this. You taught me how to be better-ish. Pounding on raw evolution, restaurant doors for your attention. Flirtation, childish. Enthusiasm, that endearing childish enthusiasm, that's 39. Calm, electric, platinum, years pass, New York City calls, ginger snap, hectic, respect this, gets married to him, I see her less, 39, visions blast yet, part of her lives in it, the number, limitless, exists in it, of it, the way she moves her body, wax and wanes with it, vibrationally charges it, Reiki runs through and caresses it, but that's not nearly the best of it. Jamie, 39, thank you for it. I see me in it, mirrored positive retrospect, legitimately legit, but the best of it is you. Unapologetically you, annoyingly and charmingly and smelly ass you, the you that tells me I'm an asshole and beautiful, the you that checks myself at the door, the you on the floor, bamboo, white kicks, shoes, the more, the forever wanting more, the guardian, the muse, the abuse, the healing, the painted bathtubs and ceilings, the Long Island 495 exit 39 Jew, seaweed fiend, less sugar please, cookie meanie, beautiful machine, organically Jamie, clean. Beautifully remembered and even more beautifully seen. A friend, a family member, I need 39. Jamie, the best of it, the most important of it, the essence of it is you. There's 433 words in this piece, okay? Now there's exactly 439.
Explosive shockwaves can cause situations such as body displacement, emotional breakthroughs, relatable flashbacks, and love.
This is a conversation with a human I love named Jamie. This number 39, we're going to start here, okay? You and I have matching tattoos on our forearms. Yes. This number 39 has been a huge part of your life since when?
To be honest with you, I thought that you might ask me that. I'm like, I can't, from as long as I can remember, it was just like in me. Like, I don't remember where I saw it first. I don't remember when it started to happen. I know that as far back as high school, people knew about it. Mm-hmm. So I imagine it was even younger than that for me that I first like started to become aware of it and then started talking about it. But yeah, I don't even know how it started.
What is it? Give me the feeling. I tried
complete peace. It is absolutely knowing and trusting and like everything possible that all is meant to be and all will be as it should be, and that there is like no question that I am 100% taken care of and that nothing can go wrong.
All of that exists in this number.
In this number.
Yes.
Right? And so like, you know, I have an obsession with threes, right? And so then it's three, and then it's nine is three times, and then 3 plus 9 is 12, yeah. 1 plus 2 is 3, 13 times three.
Right.
You know, there's just so many things. And it literally just, I can only explain it as like, when I see it, it's almost like a nod from the universe being like, you got this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're good. And that's, and like in times where life was like crazy and things were so awful, like that's often when they'll show up the most. And it literally will make me, in like a major panic attack, exhale and be like, all good. The universe has this for me.
It's all for me
and yeah. not to me. And mm-hmm. like, it's just an absolute trust.
Yeah. And throughout all of the years that we spent together, I mean, pretty quickly on, I would say, like, I adopted this number from you. And the number now in my life has just as much meaning to it. And, you know, it extends to other people in my life, right? Like, anyone I've ever dated knows the power of 39. Like, fans on Instagram know the power of 39. I'll get
so
messages,
crazy.
Like, sent to me of screenshots of 39, and, like, friends send me pictures of 39 if there's a license plate. Like, I get it all the time. It's hysterical that this number has been, like, passed down.
And the irony is, I remember a long time ago, I think we were both still living in L.A. at the time, that we even looked it up and there isn't much written about it.
Well, there's a few things written about it. Like, I've done more research now that we were going to have this conversation. And I think it's pretty in, what is it, Japanese? Is that what I said?
Yeah, you said Japanese.
Yeah, in Japan, they send 39 in text form because it means thank you, like san kyu.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a little short abbreviated version of san kyu. It's the first number that is a multiple of three primary numbers. It's like the most like uninteresting number.
That's what I mean when
right.
like you look it up. It's not like there's all this like beautiful like
yeah.
mythology behind it, but it's almost like it's the angels looking down,
mm-hmm.
right? And just like that's the only way I can describe it.
It's a beautiful number, too, the way
it really looks.
It, like, it looks
no
really
edges,
feminine.
It's yeah. super soft.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I love it. I do.
All right. Who are you, Jamie Graber?
I think it depends on the moment that you ask.
Well, good thing I'm asking you right now.
right now, I'm really a very happy, trusting person. I don't know. I mean, I just come from, some of you might know, I just closed down my, well, first of all, if some of you don't know, when Nico and I had first met, we were going to open up, we met in a raw food restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working there doing like marketing, and everyone was talking about, oh my God, you see this beautiful person. And everyone was going crazy about this new hostess,
girl.
Whichever. Doesn't
well,
matter.
I mean,
titles mean nothing.
Exactly. Labels. Let's be honest here. I'm 19 years old. I am working at Giuliano's, dressing like Giuliano, butterfly clips in my hair.
Your hair was like down and like lioness at the beginning. And everyone was talking about you. And I remember seeing him like, okay, whatever. You know, because like, you were just so young and so innocent and so pretty.
Right.
And like, I was like into dirty and tattoos. Like I didn't even, people were going crazy, like mm-hmm. everyone. And then it was when I was doing my like third like yoga teacher training. And we've talked about this many times, and I had a class. I had a yoga room in my home in LA. And you
invited Giuliano and I to come take a class.
We invited a bunch of people from the staff.
Right.
It was like a whole bunch of us mm-hmm. in there. And I...
This is like the first time we ever said words to each other. Really.
Exactly.
You were...
Yes. Yes. It was like Rosh Hashanah. It was Yom Kippur.
It was Yom Kippur. You were doing an adjustment on me, on my
yes.
back, pushing my leg back.
Because I wasn't teaching the class, which is why I never became a teacher.
You were just
I didn't
doing
want to
adjustments.
Do it. I was doing all adjustments.
Yeah.
And you were in Downward Dog.
No, I wasn't. I was on the floor.
Are you
too.
Sure?
100%.
Because I feel like I was pushing
no,
on
no.
your back.
I was looking straight up at you.
Oh. It changes everything.
It may have even been like a pigeon on the floor, like a thread no. the needle, and you were like pushing back
oh,
on my leg.
Okay, that makes
and
sense.
And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And you were like, oh, wow. You're
it was
a sensation
like our
junkie.
Eyes just like locked
Tar-
and like
so
lit
hard.
Up.
Yeah. And you say you're a sensation junkie, huh? And I was like, this bitch got my number. Like, like the one girl who like wasn't giving me any attention in the yep. restaurant, right? Of course, is the one that I'm gonna like flock to.
Yes.
And it was just pretty much like game on from there. I was going to school at Loyola Marymount, working at this restaurant. You know, fresh face. I didn't really know. I didn't really have any friends. In LA at the time.
And I was kind of like, I was doing my like third teacher training. I'm from New York, but I was living in LA and I was getting ready to leave my fiance. And I was just in a place of complete and absolute possibility mm-hmm. of anything and like with no attachment to any type of results. So I think that we were both just in this place where there was like there was no agenda and absolutely no needing to define it or know what it was. Mm-hmm. And so we were just so present in it.
Right. I think this is an appropriate time to like talk about the age difference that existed too. Funny enough, like we are exactly the same age difference as Josh and Liza are on my TV show, younger.
Totally.
I mean, I was 19 and you were what, 31, 33?
You just turned 19 when I met you,
yeah.
or did right? And
mm-hmm.
so, what am I, 12 years older than you?
Yeah.
So
32, 31.
I was probably 31 and I was turning 32 in November.
Right, in November.
And we
yeah.
met in like that.
We met in like August, September.
End of
yeah.
August, September, because it was right around Yom Kippur. The irony, I remember when I started watching Younger and I'm watching it and I text you and I was like, oh my God, I'm like, the age difference sounds so normal now. And you were like, it always was.
It
Jamie.
Always was. It was never anything to me at all. And like, it really wasn't anything to you either.
Clearly not, because we can also go on record saying my husband is 9.5 years younger than me.
Is 9.5 years younger than you.
Clearly, yeah. I'm a very immature woman.
So I want to get back to us later on in mm-hmm. this conversation. There's like specific parts of our relationship that I'm curious about talking about, but I kind of want to just like jump to you for a little bit.
Okay.
The question is, and how we got to this part of the conversation, is who are you? That was the original question. Somehow we started talking about us. Like, if you are writing your bio on your website, okay, but it's not formal,
right.
and I'm asking you, like, who is Jamie Graber? What do you want people to, like, take away from the bio?
I think the main thing about me, which is so different than what a lot of people's, like, first perception of me, is that I'm truly, I can say, one of the most compassionate people
mm-hmm.
Around. And I think that I see people very quickly, good things and bad things about them. And with that, I am able to like very much connect with people and be able to help them get to where they sort of need to be, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I am a very lucky, mm-hmm. a very blessed person who's completely in gratitude all the time, even when things are going deeply wrong. I never lose that feeling of gratitude
mm-hmm.
and knowing that I am completely taken care of. But I guess, how would you describe me? What would you say I was if you were writing my bio?
Well, I would start with your job, right? I would say
oh.
that you are very much so involved in the health and
yes.
spirituality world. You have owned your own raw food restaurant.
This is true.
You you know, you are married. You
oh, so you mean like a are, real like bio?
Yeah,
got
you
it.
Are.
Okay, so I'm a daughter of the most amazing man in the world, my father.
Mm-hmm. And you have a mother. So.
And I have my mother, who I love very much, but she is crazy. But I am a sister to a brother who is loving and amazing and so incredibly compassionate, yet so incredibly different than me. Mm. I'm someone who loves taking care of my body, whether that be through food, company I keep, working out, you know, yoga, all that kind of stuff. I'm deeply, deeply spiritual. Mm-hmm. And I would say that that runs through almost every decision and like movement I make, is recognizing that I'm connected to something other than myself. And I'm a great smoothie maker. I'm a terrible cook. I can make the best coffee or any kind of tonic. I'm really like a magician when it comes to like elixirs or anything like that.
You're a liquid lover.
I'm a liquid lover. Mm. I am a liquid lover.
You're a detox guru.
I'm a detox guru. But I'm also into the retox. Like, I'm also into the idea that, like, you don't play a total life filled with just, like, the clean.
Mm, I love that. Retox. Is that is that a term that people use?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I think that that's important. I think that, like, a lot of times people can get into this idea that it's all supposed to be this clean living and all of this. I'm like, I don't at all adhere to that. Right. Not that I'm like...
Not at all.
Well, I don't... Well, that doesn't mean that I don't believe in sobriety and stuff, because I do for some people, especially if that's something that they struggle and that's an important thing for them. But in general, like, I mean, I don't think that you should, let's say when it comes to eating, I don't believe that you have to sit there and have this perfect thing. I believe French fries, if wanted, should be in everyone's lives.
You love French fries.
I do.
It's your favorite food in the world.
I don't know if my favorite food in the world. but it's definitely something that I remember, like, when I was, like, deeply anorexic. And
I was just going to switch to this part of the conversation. You haven't always had a wonderful relationship with food.
Oh, definitely not. Definitely and let me
not.
Tell you, you can still catch me on days when it's unhealthy again,
right.
You know, which is part of why I think being married to Will is super helpful for me, because, you know, he...
You're switching topics right now.
Sorry.
Let's kind of just
But meaning, like, with the food thing, it's like I would never say that I don't have that in me still, because I do, and it can get triggered super easily.
Well, let's go back a little bit. Like, when you were a little kid.
Yes.
First, tell me what you were like as a little kid.
So I recently posted on Instagram a picture of myself, my father, and my brother. Mm. And I think you probably saw it.
Family full of gingers.
Yes, family filled with gingers. And, like, I'm looking at, and it was such an interesting picture for me to post, because I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at this little girl, and I'm like, oh, my God, she is so cute, and she is so sweet, and she is so innocent. Mm. And then all of a sudden, what came to me is I'm like, and she is in so much pain, and, like, she is so sad because she is being tortured daily because she has that red hair. That why when I look at this picture, part of what is so incredibly cute is this gigantic red afro that's on her head, you know? And, like, and it started to take me down, you know, like, I obviously am someone who's, like, very self-analytical, and I look through, like, where is, like, the pain stored? Like, where is the pain coming from that I have that I still struggle with often? And it's, like, recognizing, I remember when I was younger, like, I would look in the mirror and I would be like, I loved what I saw. I really did. And I thought that I was beautiful. But then I would go to school and I would be tortured, like, at least my version of it, right? Like, I remember when I was anorexic and I saw the doctor, and he was the psychiatrist, and he was trying to explain to me that that version of history is just my version and it wasn't actually true. Mm. But in everything inside of me, I can tell you that I was taller. I was the first one to get boobs. I was the only redhead. Mm. And it was like I was always, growing up, I was always part of the popular crew, but not the most popular one of it. And, like, the one who, again, my version of it was that I was left out, that I was always like, you know how you like want everyone to look at you? I notice sometimes I want to fade into the crowd.
And even like, still.
Even still. Yeah. And when I think about that, I'm like, where is that stemming from? And I know it goes back to this idea that like I couldn't fade into the crowd back then. And like when I was younger, it was like you would be, if you weren't like part of the main crowd and you stood out, it felt awful. Mm. You know, it wasn't like, you know, I feel like, and I don't know because I don't have children, growing up now, like it's quite beautiful, a lot of stuff, because there is more space in people to feel different and to feel like it's okay. But especially in the town that I grew up in, which was like a bunch of wealthy, Jewish, spoiled, including me, very spoiled.
White people.
White people who had no problem. Like I, my egg, my house was egged.
Mm-hmm.
When I went, because I was also a major bitch.
Some things never change, babe.
I actually don't think that I'm a bitch anymore.
No, I don't either.
But I was like, and again, it was like all defense and it was all because I was so scared and sad and all that kind of stuff. But like when I was in camp, they had a Jamie Graber day where like everyone went to Flagpole. It was sleepaway camp and they were all wearing red.
Huh.
Now, if that happened today, I'd be like,
Fuck yeah.
That's right, bitches bow,
yeah.
You know? But back then, as an 11-year-old girl, I didn't have the confidence. And the thing that was so ironic is that I can't even say, like, when I looked in the mirror, I did think I was awesome.
Mm.
But society and the people around me constantly tell me that I wasn't. And, like, I think that that's back to that picture.
Well, what about, like, in your family, though? I mean, like, what was your dad and your brother and everybody saying? Because you're not the only redhead. Like, what was
in my family?
Yeah, what was the support from that side of things?
You know, my mom was from the time where, like, all it mattered was for you to be beautiful, and she thought I was, which is probably a big part of why every time I looked in the mirror, I was like, damn, this girl looks good.
You look good.
Yeah, and I really know that I felt that.
Mm-hmm.
And then my father worked a lot. He was not really home that much.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always super proud of me, and I'm very close to him. But so my hair was like really, really curly and unruly, and my mother would not like brush it or like at all, at all, like sort of take care of it. And then like I would go with my dad into the city. We live in Long Island, and he'd take me into the city to this woman, Paula.
Mm.
And Paula would be the only person who I'd let do my hair. And she would like blow out my hair, and then my dad would be like, oh, you look really pretty, which is part of what happened where I like started to at one point like only want my hair straight.
Mm.
Now I go back and forth, but then it was like, my dad liked it when it was clean. And it's interesting because I'll still notice to my dad today that like when my dad looks at me and says something like, wow, you look really pretty today or something, then I'm like, okay, then it's true.
Hmm.
So it was a little bit with my mom. It was like every second of every moment.
You're beautiful. You're beautiful. You're beautiful.
So it meant almost nothing. But for my father, it was my father's approval in every manner way was like the thing that I was always craving. And he gave it to me. It's not like he didn't give it to me.
Right.
But it wasn't like my mom where with my father, you still had to work for it. Like you had to look nice to get it. You couldn't just like show up looking crappy. Like you had to be in your cute outfit and then he thought you looked good or you had to like do something well.
Did you look up to your parents' relationship growing up?
I definitely do now. I would say they're like literally a sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they love each other so much, but there's like constant screaming and like they are constantly, you know, if you ask my dad, how long you've been married? And he'll be like, well, if I shot her the day I met her, I'd be out by now. Like that's literally his answer. And then like when I'm like, anytime I speak to my dad and I'm like, yeah, I heard mom's annoyed about something. And he's like, I explain to her daily. You're not bolted in. You are free to go. It's like she is free to go. That woman is free to go. But the irony is that like my dad loves my mother more than anything. And I think a lot about now as an adult and as someone who's married and like understands like how much work it takes to be married, that I honor my parent relationship because no matter what, they will stay in it and they love each other. And I don't want to say that they'll stay in it, meaning like if they weren't happy, but like they're so committed to family and to love. And like there's such a rare, it's so rare to have someone in that like totally conservative like version of family.
Right. Traditional.
Traditional. Yeah. But also kind of conservative mm-hmm. these days too, yeah. you know. And it works and it's true, and it's not forced on either side. Mm-hmm. Like it is complete and utter love.
Well, I think they have like a really interesting thing going on too. They spent a lot of time of the year apart from each other too, right?
Yeah, that happened like about 10 years ago. So my dad stays in New York like half the winter, like every other week, and then my mom is in Florida whole winter.
Yeah, he's in Florida.
Yeah, of course. She's a little snow bud.
When did your relationship with food, like, really change?
Like in the positive way or in the bad way?
Negative way as a kid.
Okay, so then talk about the torture still going on. And, like, it's so interesting because I'm really recognizing lately with all this, like, self-study how hard my – when I say, like, I don't have pain points, no, I have some terrible pain points that happens. I didn't get into sorority. I went to Maryland first.
Oh, interesting.
And I was only there for one semester, and I didn't want to go. And my father forced me to go because he had never, you know, for him, he really wanted me to go to a school that had like a big like football team and all that. And you know me, like a big football team.
You
and
could give two shits.
And a sorority is like not my thing.
Right.
But he made me go there.
So you rushed?
I rushed. And someone knew me from something, and there was the story. And yeah, I didn't get in. And like, mind you, when growing up, I was being told that I would be the president of SDT one day. Like, that's like what I was always being told. I haven't even told the story in so long. And yeah, and that sucked. And I was also in Denton Hall, University of Maryland. And anyone who knows anything about University of Maryland is like, okay, so everyone from Long Island who's Jewish, you basically take your high school and you just go right there. Mm. And like, nothing changes. So I wasn't getting to go to college and like reinvent myself.
Right.
I basically went to college and got stuck with millions of me. And so I left after a semester and I transferred to Penn State. Mm. And I had this girl, Jen, who was I had met when I was in 10th grade. And she was probably like, I will say, we've since mended it, but whenever anyone would ask me about my biggest heartbreak I've ever experienced was when she ended my friendship with her. Mm. So we were inseparable, and, you know, she showed me these great things called laxatives. Mm. I was like, what? You eat the pizza and it comes out? This is fabulous. And I'm now, so it's second semester of freshman year.
Okay.
And so I'm learning about this, and then me being me, I'm like,
extremist.
What would happen if I ate nothing and took these? And so then I started to eat nothing, work out about 7 hours a day doing cardio,
Jesus.
And then take packs of like Durlex and stuff like that. And I would, and this was going on for basically a year. And you know, it was like we were in a dorm for freshman and sophomore year. And this was continuing on for sophomore year.
Were you partying too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But the irony is that back then, I was at my worst. I'm 5'7" and a half. I was probably 85 pounds.
Jesus.
I was 85 pounds. And I was, my 21st birthday, 21 shots. No problem. Like, I have no idea how I didn't die. Uh-huh. Like, I still have no idea.
Angels.
But yeah. But I would literally, like, be in the bathroom, in that, like, communal bathroom in the dorms, and sweat pouring off of my body because I had nothing inside of me and I was taking laxatives. And pouring, thinking I'm going to die, and then being like, I promise you, God, get me through this, and I promise you I will stop. And then the same thing the next night and the next night. And it was just my thing. And then, like, I would start to eat a little bit and then just double the amount of I would take. Mm. And then, like, come senior year is when it started to get very, very bad. And there was a guy and there was a situation and it shouldn't have happened, but it did. And that sort of put me over my edge of, like, any type of self-worth I could possibly have left at that point. Mm. And I think I really just stopped wanting to eat anything at that point. And I remember I would come home to my parents and I would have on like gigantic overalls and fill my entire legs with those Velcro weights because I knew they were going to throw me on the scale. Mm. I knew I had to go on the scale each time. And so I would do all these things so that like that wasn't going to happen. I would take tuna fish And I would put it on the sides of my face when I heard my mother coming home, like during breaks from college, because I would want her to think that I ate it and be like, oh, what? Oh, there's food on my face? What do you mean? Anything, you know. I remember I would go and like that working out was like out of control. And she got a phone call once from the gym because she was my emergency contact. And they're like, we need your daughter. It was like, it's interesting because I don't know even know what the policies are, but it was so long ago. But they called her and they were like, you need to come get your daughter. Like, she can't be here anymore. She's been working out for a really long time and we don't feel safe with her here. Hmm. And then one summer, I would stay at the NYU dorms. This was part of, like, a turning point for me, but, like, the very, very beginning. And I was working at a Crunch on 13th Street back then, and that was, like, the gym before Equinoxes and all that. Mm. And they pulled me aside, and they said that I wasn't allowed to work out there anymore unless I had a trainer because they didn't feel comfortable.
Wow.
And when I met that trainer, things sort of slowly started to shift. He introduced me to a therapist. Mm. The therapist introduced me to a nutritionist.
Right.
And then also, and this is the summer actually before my senior year. And like Jen, who was again like my best friend, like I could not stand without her next to me. Like it was a very, very dependent relationship. And she met a guy who was older, and I would tell her that I think it was wrong. And so, like, she and I started drifting a little bit this summer. And then, like, where I landed was with this circle I had now, which was this trainer. He would take me out at night. Like, he was so worried about me. And so I kind of landed there, but I wasn't ready to get better. Because then what happened was I went back to my senior year, and this thing happened with this guy.
Right.
And it was towards the end of the year. And, like, my, you know, Penn State's a huge school. And I remember my guidance counselor pulled me in. It was like the end of second semester. And he was like, listen, I have to pull you out of all your classes. He's like, you're going to fail out. Because I wasn't going to class. I was working out. It wasn't even like I was like drinking. And I was drinking, but that's not what was happening. I was just working out so much.
Wow.
Yeah. And so he was like, I don't want you to fail because you'll ruin your GPA. He's like, so I'm going to pull you out. He's like, but you need to go get help. Yeah. He's like, and you need to get better. And so Jen and I packed up, drove home. And this was like before caller. That's how old I am. This was before caller ID and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It was like just beginning. She moved into the city. I moved to my parents' house in Long Island. And it was before I got my apartment in the city. And I started calling her because we were supposed to go back to pick up all of our stuff. And she never picked up the phone again. And I would call, and I would call, and I would call. And she wouldn't pick up the phone. Mm. And then finally, her family got on the phone with my mom and said, your daughter's sick, and she needs help. And my daughter can't be part of that right now because it's too much. You know, how that all happened was obviously so hard for someone at that age and, like, really difficult. Jen and I didn't wind up talking again until I actually moved back after I lived in L.A. Then I moved back to New York and she randomly, I'm on a date with someone. And he's like, what's the most painful breakup you ever had? And I was like, this girl, Jen, like she broke my heart with everything I had inside of me. I'm like, but it was the most beautiful thing that ever happened because I moved to L.A. and my life changed and everything changed, which wouldn't have happened. And also my phone starts making these really weird noises, which I have no idea. It was like the beginning of Facebook back then, right? I have no idea what it is. So I'm like, and I'm literally talking about her. I go to grab my phone just to see what this noise is. It's Facebook messages from her. And she's like, hey, it's been forever. And by forever, I think at this point it was 12 years or something. And she was like, I'm listening to The Counting Crows, which was like, that was our jam. And she's like, and I can't help but be dancing around and thinking of you. I hope you're well. And I was like, and I literally, on the date, I wrote, I'm on a date. I'm headed home. Can I call you? And she's like, please do. And then we spent like hours on the phone that night. And like now we're friends again, which is crazy. But with like the getting better, back to that part. So then like when she like left my life, I was on like my parents' couch. And my mom was like, I didn't want to be alone because I had nothing. Like Jen had like in my story, you know, my version of the story, she took all of our friends, you know, and she took everything from me. And so I was sitting here all alone, not knowing what to do. And my mom's like, this is too much. Like, my mom didn't know what to do because she was terrified to leave me alone, but she couldn't spend all her time with me. And she was just at a loss. And we started seeing, I started seeing a therapist, but it wasn't, it was a psychiatrist because at this point, medication was probably going to have to be in order. And then my dad's best friend called me. And he was like my family friend. And he was like, your father's crying. He doesn't know what to do. And he's terrified because he's watching his daughter kill himself. And kill herself. And you have to stop. And then I went into the doctor that day and I said, okay, give me Prozac. I'll do this. And so I went on for 6 months. And then I took myself off. I was on, like, the lowest dose. I was so sick that, like, I would take it and, like, pass out. Mm. And it felt awful. I just felt numb. I wasn't happy. I wasn't sad. Like, there was nothing happening. Mm. But I could eat. And then within, I don't know how long after that, I moved into the city and I moved in with my, like, best friend from high school. And it wasn't healed by any stretch because I still had, like, major food stuff. But I wasn't 85 pounds anymore. Right. You know, I was walking. And then I would say the true healing happened when I moved out to L.A. And I was like, oh, this is what people get to do in college, which is completely reinvent yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I went out there.
And when you were how old?
I think I was 24, 25 when I moved out there. Mm-hmm. Not knowing anyone and just knowing that my soul felt right out there. Yeah. I remember that's what I told my father. And he's like, okay, I'm not going to argue with
your
soul.
Can't you argue with the soul?
Yeah, that was what he said. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, right around the time I met you is when I started getting deeper into the whole raw thing. Right. And I would, at that point, it was my third yoga teacher training. Mm-hmm.
You did what, 700 hours?
I think I did a 300 hour, a 200 hour, and a 200 hour.
Seven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Never teaching, though.
So it was just for your own practice.
I don't know. I think back then maybe I thought it was, and I know that I take it into, like, when I'm working with clients now, mm-hmm. too. Like, there's definitely – it weaves itself in. But, no, I've never, like, sat in front of a teacher.
Right.
But I think it really helped me just understand the difference between, like, fearing food and seeing it as something that there's, like, so much joy around, mm-hmm. and that there is – that it's fuel. And that I think when I first, like, met you – was when I was really into the idea that, like, everything that you ate was just for fuel. Mm. And so I was no longer scared about, you know this, like, we'd eat, like, 8 avocados. Like, no problem.
No issue at all.
Yeah, so I was no longer scared of fat. I wasn't scared of any of that. But I also, and you know this well, that, like, I also would not eat anything unless I thought it was serving my body.
Right.
Completely. So in hindsight, when I think that, like, that's what saved everything for me, what was the turning point, I also think that it was just another version of
an eating disorder.
Of an eating disorder.
Yeah, I mean, raw food has that built into it, you know? And I think if you're not an extremist in the first place, you're not going to find raw food. And raw food, like, builds limitations around not just what you can eat, but, like, the people that you spend time with and how you look at everybody else. And, like, it's a very restrictive, controlling lifestyle. And if you're already susceptible to some sort of disease surrounding food, it's only going to make it worse.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And,
you know, I have my own issues with eating disorders growing up, too. Overeating, then cutting everything out, you know, and then going vegan in fourth grade for 3 years, and my uncle has been raw for 30 years, so he, Uncle Ralphie, he showed me the way to raw food, and, you know, I knew immediately that I wanted to work at Giuliano's the second I moved to Los Angeles, and it just so happened that this fucking asshole was working there, too.
And the irony is, I think we started, like, the same week.
Yeah, the same week.
And I didn't
mean
to work for him. It just happened.
It just happened. He just offered you a job.
He literally, I walked in, I met him. My friend's like, I want you to meet Giuliano for lunch. I'm like, okay. And I met him, and he's like, you're hired. I'm like, for what? He's like, I don't know, just show up tomorrow. Mm. And literally, I think that was the week that you started.
So now let's talk about us for a second. Because you, obviously, like, that story is going to help a lot of people, A. But this show, The Love Bomb, right? Like, we have such an interesting love, and we always have. We met under the circumstance. It was a very, like, non-traditional sort of relationship. Like, it wasn't sexual in nature in the beginning at all. Like, We met and we were like immediate soulmates.
Yes.
And we spent, I mean.
I think that the whole thing is that I think we met and it was this automatic, I see you.
Right. I see you. You see me.
And I think that's super rare for, mm-hmm. for you to really, it's not, it's I see you and I love you.
Yeah.
And I think.
And we like truly had space for each other in our lives at that point. Like I'm in LA. I don't know anybody. Like I needed a teammate. You needed a teammate. And we just fucking ran our, we lived in our own bubble. I moved into your house within a few months.
We wound up, I was engaged, remember?
Yes. I love this story.
And
engaged, like to be married, like wedding plans were in the works.
Well, actually, no. That's, let's just pass. The, we were, in, I was engaged to someone who, like the day I met him, I knew why we would not work.
Right.
And I had already called off the wedding once. Mm. And we were getting back to the point where, like, and, like, we moved away from, we moved out of each other's place. And we were, like, reconnecting him and I, where we were spending more time together again. And, like, we were going, like, you know, he was a really big, is a really big surfer. So we would go and, like, go on these weekends, these surf weekends. And I remember we went on one, it was great. And then, and, like, he would start hanging out in my apartment again. And then I would get a text from this boy Nico, actually Sweet Nico. That's
Sweet
how he
Nico,
was in my,
yeah.
That's how he was in my phone.
Want to smoke some weed? that would be the text. The one.
No,
to hi.
No. The text was, "Do you want to go skateboarding?
You want to go skateboarding?" I'm obsessed with longboarding at the time.
And I had my little longboard one. And I'm like, yeah, totally. And so like I'd leave and like just go skateboarding, and of course then we would like go smoke pot and we just started quote unquote skateboarding together right. all the time. And then there were these fires. Mm-hmm. And because this is, did we
the
stay
Santa
at your
Ana's.
House first?
Yeah, yeah.
Before the fires?
We stayed at my house. We ate some mushrooms, right?
And we stayed like, at his house for like 3 days straight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Didn't leave. We like walked down to the beach a couple times. But for the most part, we were like rolling tea and smoking tea.
Yes.
And making videos and eating yes. mushrooms. And like I was still in school at this point.
Wait, mind you, this was the girl who like for so long, up until I think I got to California, I still had a tiny voice that was like, you're not worthy. Like, you're not pretty. You don't look like the rest of them. Mm. And then I got to California, and that really changed for me.
Right.
And then I get in front of Nico, and the two of us would just, like, stare into the video camera and be like, we are fucking beautiful. Are you kidding?
Oh my God.
And this would go on for hours.
For years, really. I mean.
And then we started to, we would wrestle.
Yeah.
And we would like beat the crap out of each other.
Right. But like we weren't hooking up. There was no sexuality involved in it. It was like, it was really familial almost. It was like kindred spirits that were like playing with each other.
Yeah.
And everyone on the outside of us thought that we were, had been dating.
Because we were, sleeping all together, over each other.
All
we
over,
couldn't
obsessed.
Not be touching each other.
It was arguably like one of the most intimate relationships I've ever been in my entire life. I mean, shortly after we took a couple trips together, in quotation, I moved into your house, right? Mm-hmm. I got out of my apartment, dropped out of school, moved into your house, and like for the next, what, almost 2 years, we lived together.
Yeah.
And
I remember going through, like, really being at the beginning of your acting and mm-hmm. knowing everything inside of me. I remember when you decided to drop out of college. You're mm-hmm. like, should I do this? I'm like, absolutely. I'm like, you were going to make it, my friend. I'm like, mm-hmm. there is not a piece of me that yeah. doesn't believe that you will.
I mean, it was honestly, it was like some of the most important advice I'd ever gotten. And like you were such and still are such a cheerleader for who I am and what I wanted to do, like that without you I don't know that I would be where I am, and I certainly wouldn't be having this conversation on a podcast that's mine, you know, like
I remember like saying to you and seeing you and being like, you have to do this because you're going to do it differently than anybody else. Mm. And it's so important for people, and granted back then like all the craziness happening on wasn't as present back right. then. Like, we didn't know, like.
Well, we didn't have social media either.
We didn't have social media. Yeah. I think it was, like, the beginning of, like, Facebook. Mm-hmm. And, like, I remember just looking at you and saying, like, you have no choice but to do this, right? Because you have to be a voice for people who need you. And you're not going to be like those same typical ones. You're going to show them that there are different ways you can do things. And I remember so clearly knowing that. I remember being on the phone with your mom when she would worry. And I'd be like, do not worry. Mm-hmm. Like, this is taken care of. This is going to be unbelievable. And you weren't even nearly as outspoken as you are now.
I didn't even know who I was.
Right,
either.
Like even to like me in our closeness, it's not like you told, like the things that you talk about now, you weren't talking about then, but I still knew what a huge voice you would be, even more so than just knowing like the actor part that you would be. I knew that you would be a role model and this idea of hope for so many people who would need it. And I am like beyond floored by what you do now and how you're so open for it and how definitely now, not like it's sad what is happening now. And there's obviously so much deep sorrow in the world. But I think and I try to, you know, look at things differently and try to understand that there's hope in it. And like part of what's beautiful about the time that's happening now is that there are so many people who are standing up.
And celebrating love.
And celebrating love and celebrating like the idea that like it doesn't have to look exactly as our parents told us it was going to look. And like it's just as beautiful. And I think that you are doing such an incredible job.
Thanks, babe.
At that.
I love you.
I love you. Spreading that love around. This is the love
bomb. This is the show. Okay, I want to take a few moments here to tell you about Spoke. This is a new listening app from SiriusXM and partner of The Love Bomb. Spoke is more than just a podcast app, okay? It's a social audio platform. You can listen to podcasts, radio programs, documentaries, and so much more. Have you ever had a difficult time finding a podcast? Psh, I know I have. Well, Spoke has a team of curators, real-life human beings, not robots, who help you discover your new favorite podcast by finding the best moments and highlights from shows and organize them into thematic playlists. Choose from close to 100 different playlists. There's just so many podcasts that I want to listen to, but it's a little overwhelming to start listening to each one. Because I have no idea what I'm going to like or what's good. So this is like a friend sharing their playlist with you, right? Allowing you to listen to the best clips from each song. I love it. If you like what you hear, you can join the conversation, leave a voice comment. You can also share anything you find on the app with friends on social media. That's right, hit me up on the gram. You can download Spoke from the Apple App Store or Google Play. Go to hearspoke.com/at will to support The Love Bomb and all your other favorite At Will shows. Spreading that love around. This is The Love Bomb. If you were to, like, describe our relationship, because it's very non-traditional. I mean, we didn't sleep together for, like, a year and a half and slept in bed next to each other every single night. And, like, there was, like...
That's not true.
Yeah, it is.
No, because we met in, like, August and...
It was, like, a year later that we went to Vegas.
I don't think it was.
I'm telling you. For sure. Maybe 9 months.
I think it was like in March.
No.
I have something.
Okay, whatever. That's not the point. But if you were to describe, because even when we were sleeping together, it wasn't like we were boyfriend and girlfriend, but we were like madly in love with each other.
Madly.
Right. Like before we were even sleeping together. So like, I think I have a hard time kind of putting my finger on like what exactly it is that we were doing. And if somebody asked you how you would describe it at this point, our relationship back then, what would you say?
So I think that what it comes down to back then is that we were so in love with each other. And I think we really were in this like crazy, beautiful in love. And this idea like of seeing like utter and incredible possibility in each other and in ourselves. Like when I looked at you, I knew that I had the possibility to do anything. So it wasn't just, and I also saw that
it
you
was this
did
mirror,
as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I think that that was quite beautiful. And I think that we knew because of the age difference that we never, especially because the age difference of where we were.
Right.
It's not like you on the show now of like whatever it is, 26 and 40. Mm-hmm. It was
19 and 33. And also like 19, like trying to become famous in LA. Like you knew what I was going to do, what I was trying to do.
And also, you know, you were 19, like, you know, as a 32, 33-year-old woman who was like already engaged, like I knew that I wasn't, that there was no real possibility for us to wind up together.
Right.
And I think with that, it reminds me of like this college boyfriend who once said to me, I don't want to, he was my best friend and we had like kissed and he was like, I don't want to do this. And I'm like, why? And he was like, because I'm not going to marry my college sweetheart, which means that we will one day break up. And I never want to break up with you. And so let's just not do this. And I think that there was some of that energy in there that like we knew it would end if we really let that part happen. But because we sort of, that was the one space where like we didn't totally let loosen, I think that that kept it so that it was always in this idea of sort of like a possibility and never in this real thing. Because if it went that way, we would have had to break them up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think either of us would have ever really wanted that.
Well, you tried to get me out of your life a few different
times.
And, like, I just would not let
you
it happen.
You one resilient motherfucker.
There's no way I was going to let you just fucking close the door on me. There was no way.
Because, you know, also back then, you know, so when you and I started separating and you moved out and then you were going into more of, like, your age.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that was when Eric Phillips was there and Bethany was moving out. And it was, like, this whole other version of you.
That you didn't know.
And I didn't want to know.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to know it existed. And I was just, like, not into it because, yeah, like, I didn't like that version of you. I didn't like that version of you because I thought that version of you negated
mm-hmm.
the version of you that I knew.
Right.
And now in hindsight, no, it's just another form of you.
Yeah, totally.
And they're all just as real, you mm-hmm. know? But I think that was a big part of why I wanted you gone. But then you wiggled your way back in.
Mm-hmm.
And within moments, we decided that we're going to Raw Spirit together.
Yeah, we just went on another road trip and just fucking left. And
we just
lived our own bubble. And I think that we've done that a lot over the years. And we continue to. Like, we don't really... Our relationship doesn't exist anywhere else but with each other. It's not like we have mutual friends.
Nope.
We don't like we don't have a group of people that we go hang out with. Whenever we're spending time with each other, it's you and me in our own bubble.
And intense.
And so intense, yeah. And over the years, like, it's changed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something I want to talk about because I think it's an interesting conversation. You've gotten married. You got married 5 years ago, 4.5 years ago?
5 years ago.
5 years ago. And your husband isn't really a fan of mine, to say it lightly. Like, he just doesn't understand where I fit into your life, doesn't want to understand, and, like, doesn't really care, right? And, like, doesn't love the fact that you and I still hang out.
Mm-mm.
I've never met him.
Weren't invited to the wedding.
Was not invited to the wedding.
Which was one of the hardest things ever.
And I think it's... I mean, we don't have to talk about specific details, but I think it's an interesting conversation to have. Like, okay, you and I have known each other for 11 years now. We mean so much to each other. And the person that you've married wants no part of me in your life, most certainly his life. And how do we navigate a relationship forward from there?
You know, I think that so a friend of mine recently had this conversation with me about the idea of monogamy, right? And if it really does exist.
Right.
And not me and you talking in the conversation,
yeah.
Someone else. And like, is it natural? And, you know, and she was saying to me that she feels like it's not fair to have to cut off other moments of inspiration that you get from new people and like all those other sparks that fly at the beginning of something. And I think that, you know, for me, obviously, I'm more conservative in my relationship. And so, like, yeah, like, I don't have those type of interactions with other people. And I save that intimacy for my husband, except for with you.
Mm.
And, you know, the interesting thing about his and I relationship is that, like, he doesn't like it. He doesn't like it. But on some level, he gets that it's so important to me, and so he allows it.
Right.
But it there are times that it bums me out that I feel like there are more things that we could do. And if there was one of the things I could change about him, it would be that he would allow...
accept our relationship a little more. Because I think, like, ultimately, him and I would probably get along.
Yeah, I mean, he's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, he's amazing, and everybody loves him. Like, I've yet to find someone who doesn't love him.
Right. And does he love everybody for the most part?
No.
No, he doesn't at all.
Yeah, so the thing that's interesting about him is that, like, in so many ways, he's very opposite me.
Yeah.
And which is part of why it works. We're like, I live in the clouds, and, like, not that I'm not grounded, but, like, I'm definitely all about, like, I'll say to him all the time, because I do my Reiki and I do all this, like, I just, like, I want you to come on the trip with me. I'm like, I want you to, like, you know, go with
come
me here.
Fly with me.
And,
yeah.
like, believe in me. Believe me. Believe that these things work. Believe that this is possible. And his answer to me is always, I believe in you.
Mm.
He's like, and so with that, I believe in it because I believe in you.
Mm.
He's like, but you can't. He's like, and I'm excited for you when you buy that new crystal and, like, you're praying with them on the floor. He's like, I love watching you do that. He's like, but if you want me to pray to the crystal, he's like, that's not what I'm going to do.
Mm.
He's like, and it's not that I don't believe in the crystal. He's like, but I need proof. He's very logical. He's a Virgo, you know. Before he was a chef, he was, like, in engineering. And so, like, he likes proof. He likes research. He likes to know. Where, like, I'm like, whose research was it? Like,
yeah.
you know, like, who's to say that that's really the way it is? And so I think... because we're so, like, he's super conservative. You know, he's from Texas. Like, he's super conservative is in his ideas of, like, what a relationship look like.
Right.
And, like, I think with us, because, you know, you – so you and I were when I met him, you know, me and him were very open at the beginning because we, again, had no agenda. We didn't think that it was going to turn into anything.
Right.
And you're the last person I had slept with.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in when me and him were dating, you would come in from L.A. You would have a – oh, my God, you had the audition for Book of Mormons.
Yeah.
I still believe that you will have a singing role one day. I was
of
thinking about this
I
when
will.
I was walking over. I was listening to, like, Harry Styles. And I'm like, oh, Nico could
kill
this. I
need to play a rock star for sure.
But anyway, so, like, I was –
you were dating him.
I was dating him, and you would come in and visit.
And we slept together once while you were dating him. And then you guys...
And we hooked up another time. So it was like both times you were in town when I was dating him.
Right.
So his version of us...
is a lot different.
Is a lot different.
Yeah.
And...
because, like, it wasn't like we were, like, fucking, okay? Like, yours and I's exchange of physical energy... was that exactly? It was like an extension of our, like...
it was connecting.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like... I always try to explain to him, like, babe, I'm like, it's just... it's not sex with Nico. It's like this, like, intimate exchange of energy. And he's like, hey, that doesn't help.
That makes it worse.
He's like, you're not winning your case here, honey. He's like, I think we need to just stop. You know, and also, like, his version also stems back to... you and I know this isn't exactly how it happened, but if you look at it on paper, she was engaged, meets this young 19-year-old model, and leaves. And he knows that I'm crazy. So it's not like he doesn't think that, like, there's a part of him that's like, I don't even know her. She's nuts. Like, like, literally, he'll look at me at least once a day and be like, you are goddamn nuts. And I don't know what's going to come out of you half the time.
Mm.
And so because of that, I think that there's this little part of him that's like, could I see her being crazy again and running off? Like, I don't know that he knows how much I love him, but he also knows that I'm crazy.
Right.
And
well, how much do you love him? What does that feel like? You're married now. I mean, you never thought about being married as a little kid.
No.
You are married to the love of your life.
Yes.
What does that feel like?
So the rabbi asked me that when Will's not Jewish. And so when we were getting married, the rabbi has to meet with us three times to sort of talk
about it. She converted a Goya?
He didn't convert, but... and my rabbi is super cool where I was like showing him my like Hebrew tattoo that I got with you actually.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And I'm like, is that what it means? I'm like, does it mean the universe is the judge of truth? And he's like, well, it means the Lord. But he's like, I guess you can call it the universe. Good job, James. Like, he's like the coolest rabbi ever, Rabbi White. And... so he was like, what does it mean to be loved by Will? And I was like, when he looks at me, it literally feels like a warm waterfall of like love just like pours down on me, and I'm held. And I think that like that's how I can explain the love I have. Like I could eat him. Like like I have, and listen, he's put me through it. Like it's not easy. And right. I would say that like I didn't know that I had the ability to love someone the way I love him.
Well, what does your love look like? You described to me what his love feels like. What does your love look like?
Obsession. I just stare at him sometimes.
You're sick.
You know, I like, hey, no, wait, just on, you on, know, pause, pause. I bite his feet sometimes.
Leave it. When I was writing this poem last night, there's a line where I say, eyes squint, devilish glare, and you have this way of like, when you squint your eyes and you focus on something, like your whole body just fucking vibrates. And like, it can be really positive, but like an undertone of evil. And I was like, that is her love. Like, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is. It's obsessive. Like, my love is definitely obsessive. And also, like, he can go do his thing and he can be like, you know, take care of his stuff. And it's not like I'm constantly calling him and texting him. But like, when I'm near him, I have to be constantly touching him.
I mean, a professional might say that your obsession with a lot of things in your life, your obsession with food, your obsession with, you know, health, your obsession with spirituality, your obsession with your husband, like there is a common thread here, right?
You are being obsessive.
You are an extreme human yes. being, and you always have been. Mm-hmm. And you've come to a point in your life now where you've gotten rid of your restaurant, your baby.
Oh, thank God.
Your, like, beautiful child for how many years you had it? 7 years?
7 years.
7 years, Ginger Snaps, raw food staple of New York City. And what, three, four months ago, you decided to let it go. Mm-hmm. What did that look like? Why? Talk to me about that.
Yeah. You know, I think, as you know, through the years, having Ginger Snaps is very hard. Having a restaurant in the city is very hard. And, you know, I really created Ginger Snaps so that there was like a community and so that there was a place that like people could go and like, you know, talk about interesting things and like just a place for people like me to like hang out and find each other. Mm-hmm. And what I recognize is that like so many days, you know, when it was first in the East Village, it wasn't doing as well. And then it moved to the West Village and it was doing well. And I thought, okay, like I didn't love it in the East Village because it wasn't doing as well. So let's see what happens when it's actually doing well.
Right.
And when that was happening and I was still miserable, it was time for me to like really step back and be like, what am I doing? And I recognized that like my whole part was that I wanted to help people heal and I wanted to help people like change their story and recognize that there is like a different way. But instead, I was like making schedules and finding out why my employees were late.
Yeah.
I was managing a restaurant with employees that didn't really care about it. And that became really hard and really challenging. And, you know, my friends are some of the best like coaches and self-help people in the world.
Yeah.
And we always coach each other, but it's hard to hear them. You know, I remember when Gabby, I met Gabby through the East Village one, which
Gabby Bernstein, the spirit junkie.
One of my dearest. And she, you know, I remember her not wanting me to move to the West Village. She's like, don't do it. Just stop. Either keep it here or just like, don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Let it go. And I didn't listen. And I went and I moved it. And I think that like there came this moment where I'm like, I need help. And I went to this event and there was a coach there. And I'm like not the person who asked for help.
Mm-hmm.
And I like went up to her and I like introduced myself and I became again that like little girl.
Right, but that's not true that you're not the person that asks for help. You've been to Landmark. You've been to the Institute.
I was sent to Landmark by a friend. I wouldn't have gone by myself.
What was the other institute you went to?
I went to Integrated Nutrition.
Yeah.
But no, but I mean in the sense of I do deep work on myself.
Right. But you ask the universe for help. You don't ask another person for help.
Exactly.
Okay, I got you.
And, you know, I pray constantly asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
Big into prayer. but I don't ask people. So I never like really sat down and asked one of my people to give me counsel. Mm-hmm. And so I remember going and seeing this woman speak, and just there was something about the way she spoke that I'm like, oh, fuck, I need help from her. Mm-hmm. And I went up and I introduced, and I remember even introducing myself to her, like when like What Do You Do came up and Ginger Snaps. And I remember like literally like being like, oh. And I remember like towards the end when anyone asked me about Ginger Snaps, it was like, oh, you can't see what I'm doing, people, but I'm like moving my shoulders and like
she's
going
like
inward,
protecting
cowering.
Herself. Yeah.
Yeah. And like it just was like an energetic, ugh. I remember like when you would come there.
For the last year, it was dark.
Yeah.
There was a dark energy in there for sure.
And you would come there and I'd be like, ugh.
You'd be annoying. You would be an asshole.
I'd be
so
you
would
fight
wanna
with you.
You would want to fight with me about anything
constantly.
That you could. And like honestly, last night when I saw you, was the second time that we've seen each other since you've closed the restaurant. But the energy that you had yesterday is the most beautiful energy that I've seen probably since LA.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But what wound up happening was, so I remember I go to her, I email, I try to make an appointment, and the appointment doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Normally that'd be me like, oh, the universe is saying you don't need a coach, you got this.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, universe. Yeah. I need a coach. So I sent an email. I'm like, excuse me. I'm like, I'm trying to book an appointment. Like, and it's not letting me. And I really wanted to do one on the 5th. And it was like a month away because she has like a waiting list. And they're like, oh, we're so sorry. Da-da-da. We booked it for you. Take this month to think about really what you want to do. Mm. And I started reading on her thing. And it talks about lists and all the stuff I know. And I started doing TM. And I started to really meditate every morning and really sit and think and, like, make these lists about, like, you know.
TM, Transcendental Meditation. Sorry.
Yes. Sorry. Yes. And I started to, like, make these lists about, like, what was making me happy and what I was actually doing. And I kept on going with that. And then, like, trying to figure out, like, how to fix Ginger Snaps. Okay. And so she talks about this idea that you have to find a seeing is believing, mm-hmm. right? And so we're on the phone, and she's like, so you have to find, like, a seeing is believing. She's like, because unfortunately, you know, my mom, who she's like, unfortunately, she's your block, right? She's like, because your mom told you you're pretty, so everything will be taken care of. Mm. She's like, but that's not what you want. You want to do something. She's like, and so you have to really remove this block of this idea because your mom wasn't your seeing is believing. She's like, so you need to look to, is it Amanda from Moon Juice? Like, who is it that, like, is doing what you want to do? And I remember, and I was like, no one. I'm like, I don't really know. I'm like, and I don't know that I want to define it for myself and that I want to be the pioneer of it. I'm like, I don't know who my seeing is believing, and I don't know what it is I want to see. And she literally just goes, what if Ginger Snaps isn't it? And I was like, what? I literally think that's what I said to her. And we're on Skype. And I'm like, what? And she's like, I'm just offering that. What if? And then we go on with the rest of the conversation and we're done. So then for the next few days, we had a whole hour in intense conversation.
The only thing you think about.
The only thing I can hear is, what if Ginger Snaps isn't it? What if Ginger Snaps isn't it? And within the month, I decided Ginger Snaps wasn't it.
And within like a couple weeks, you closed, right?
Within a month of that conversation. Because I speak to her like every 4 weeks or 6 weeks. So I spoke to her right, like 6 weeks later. And I'm like talking to her and she's like, so you're closing? I'm like, no, I'm closed, Lisa. I'm like, this is done. I'm like, bank account closed. I'm like, we are done. I'm out. The doors have been, keys have been returned. Mm. And she's like, wow. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, it just became so glaringly obvious that like the list of what I do every day and the list of what gives me joy were so different. Mm. And there was no way that Ginger Snaps could ever match that list.
I mean, you divorced your restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
Are you heartbroken?
No. Mm. In everything inside of me, there is no regret. Mm. It was the best thing. Like, you know, there are challenges to doing what I'm doing now, you know, like putting yourself out there. It's very different now. Now it's me.
Right. Which is the next part of the conversation that I want to have is like, what are you doing now? What's the plan now?
So I'm going to use the word like coaching, which is not really my favorite word for it, but it's helping people. It's working on them one-on-one. You know, a lot of people still come to me for actual food stuff,
right.
Which I work with. But, you know, it's about the deeper stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's about helping people to get to this place where, like, you see everything as opportunity and nothing as happening to you, that everything happens for you.
Right.
And it's like, and when you're able to make these shifts in your mind and in the way you literally perceive the world, everything changes for mm-hmm. you. You know, there are those beautiful different mind things that you can do, and those different like tests where you can look at where, like, I don't know if you've seen that one where it's like this black shape. I can show it to you. Mm. And when you're looking at it, my friend just sent it to me recently, which is why I'm thinking about it. You either can see a black vase or you can see two faces looking at each mm-hmm. other, depending on it.
Right.
And it's just like in that very obvious thing, it recognizes that perception
is everything.
Is everything. Listen, me and you talked about this. My first email account when I was probably 20 when I had my first email account.
My Reality 39
was my first email account mm-hmm. at Earthlink.
Yeah.
I don't even think Earthlink's around anymore.
How do I even remember that?
But you know what I mean? Because that was probably my email when
yeah.
I knew you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, totally.
But you know, and I think that like if you
When I knew you.
When I met you.
Fuck you.
But yeah, I think that like that is a big part. And so, and I've also, and I think that there are, I think that having, it goes back to like I have all these close coach friends mm-hmm. who are around me, but they can't always help you as much as this objective person who can literally, again, goes back to what you said, like when I was describing me, like I can see people.
Mm-hmm.
I can see where you're blocked. I can see where you're getting in your way.
And a lot of that has to do with your Reiki training that you just got through too, right?
Yeah, and the Reiki training like helps like kind of to facilitate moving the blockages that we have.
For like anybody that doesn't know what Reiki is, can you just give me like a
Yeah, it's like
abbreviated?
A subtle, I describe it as it's like a subtle body, it is actually subtle body energy work. But like the way I think it feels, it's sort of like an energetic massage.
Mm.
And it kind of helps to move blockages and stagnant energy and stuff out of the body.
Mm-hmm.
It can be done, like I tend to have more because more of an aggressive person. I tend to touch more mm-hmm. with it, but like you don't even have to touch. And mm-hmm. there are ways that you can do it where you can send it through a computer. You can send it to different times and space.
Right.
But it's all about like pranic energy and this idea that of life force
mm-hmm.
and that you can move it with intention and with like you get attuned when you do the Reiki and like someone attunes you so that you actually have it in you and then you're able to direct it at people's bodies in different spaces so that it can help remove like actual energetic blockages.
Mm.
Like we did it yesterday.
Yeah, we had a session last night.
Yeah, how would you describe that?
Full hour session. Well, let's just paint the picture. So I met you at...
It's called M Body Work, but it's basically in Union Square.
M Body Work in Union Square. Looks like a massage room that we walked into. There's a massage mm-hmm. bed. We spoke a little bit before the session.
Right. And normally I would speak to someone more, but since I knew your stuff.
You knew where my blockages were. You knew where to clean
it
up.
We did a lot of heart chakra.
So I lay down. You play music. You light some Palo Santo. Close my eyes. Start focusing on breath. And you just worked on different chakras and different energy fields for an hour straight. Place different crystals on different parts of my body and, you know, rub my feet and rub my third eye and went down the list of, you know, body scan. And, I mean, it was incredibly relaxing, incredibly healing. Even when you weren't touching me, I could feel your hand. I mean, my eyes are shut. I could feel your hand over specific parts. I could feel a lot of heat coming off of you, shooting off of me. And afterwards, like it was such peace. And I've had Reiki sessions before, and this is the first time that I've been healed by somebody that I knew so well. So a lot of that. A lot of our past lives together, you know, even in the last 10 years, our past lives, let alone the past fucking 1,000 years that
totally.
We spent together, like a lot of that was present in the experience. And it was really safe. I felt really protected. I felt like really just loved. And I think one of the most beautiful things you said last night, and probably one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard you say, is... You were explaining how you don't want to be paid for this practice. What did you say exactly?
Well, you and I have one of our little underlying things that always comes back to us is that we're both funny because we're both incredibly generous people,
right.
Except for with each other. And we're actually very generous, like heart space, but like monetarily, the two of us are really funny about money. And I don't think that we're funny about money with other people in our lives. But together, me and you both don't want to give each other a dime. So, no, I definitely do want to be paid for this work. Like, when you would go to Ginger Snaps.
Wait, but hold on. But what was it that you were saying last night?
I'm going to explain. Okay. So when you would go to Ginger Snaps, you
I didn't expect
you would joke
anything.
Around and you would be like, give me that green juice. I'm not going to pay for it. And like, I would like hate you and not want to give it to you.
She would like tell the fucking workers that I had to pay double for everything.
Yeah, yes, totally.
Even and though like, it was like $700 for a green juice anyway.
And it was 11, all organic in a glass bottle and well worth it. But I think with me, like it goes back to the energy I had around Ginger Snaps is that like everything felt so hard there. Mm. And so difficult that the idea of giving away anything there was painful to me because I knew how exhausting it was to get it out there. Mm. And then when we were finished with the session, you were like, okay, like, do I pay them or do I pay you? And I was like, I don't want any money from this from you. I was like, this gave me pure joy to share this with you. And that's when I was like, I know that this is the work that I'm meant to do because I do it with joy and excitement. And it's not this dread upon it where it was before.
And like, you know, it's funny because you're right. We do joke about money all the time. And like to see this like light come from something that we joke about all the time. It was like, honestly, one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. I was like, oh my God, this is exactly what she's supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Like it made, like it finally, everything made sense. I feel like in that moment.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of work to do with this. You know, it's like, you know, you have to do like the emails back and forth. You have to put yourself out there.
Yeah, for sure.
And put and now it's like I don't get to hide behind Ginger Snaps. Now it's me.
Okay, let's do something. Pretend you don't know me at all, okay? You don't know anything about me. I send you an email. Hi, Jamie. I'm looking for some help. I need some help. I need some like personal coaching. How does it go? How does it happen?
So like the way it actually happens is like you go on my website and you don't and I don't even actually interact with you. You kind of read about my story and you read about like what the stuff I do is.
Your website is
organicallyjamie.com. Mm-hmm. And you basically depending like again, like a lot of people are going to come to me for food stuff. And so like depending on if it's your we talk to you about like what it is you're looking for and like how it is that I can help you. And that's the beginning of the session. And you know, it's a lot of people are going to come to me for food. So it's going to be like some recipe stuff and some stuff about that. And
some
like
cleanses,
thoughts.
Detox stuff.
Yeah. Yes. And like you can even come home. You can even come to my house and I show you how to make your cleanse because my whole thing is about empowering. Right. So like I'm not the type of coach that you're not that you're going to speak to every week because I'm not that. It's more of someone who like so much what I, you know, who is my the funny thing about my coach is that when she, after like the second or maybe the third session that I spoke to her, we were talking and I'm like, it's you. And she's like, what's me? I'm like, you're my seeing is believing. And she's like, oh my God. I'm like, no. I'm like, you are. And like, I'll send her like random, like, you know, little messages and say things to her like, because we talk every 4 weeks or 6 weeks. It's not like I talk to her all that time, but I'm every day working towards all that stuff because I think that like with a good coach or a good like person that helps you get to where you need to go, it's like you hold the space for someone and you see them the way they want to be seen and you're able to instill that vision in them so that within the 6 weeks or 4 weeks that you're not talking to them, they're still hearing your voice so that you can move along the journey and be closer and closer to the version of yourself that you want to be and that they hold the space for you to be. And so it's like I basically hold space for people to become the greatest version of themselves and to become and live the life that they've dreamed. And in that holding of space and helping them see it the same way like me and you say, like we saw each other, right? I let them know the possibility.
Right.
And with that, they then, and of course there are some techniques that we give them that are helpful and tools in order to like when you have those moments where you get stuck and stuff, like how to work through that. And then it's checking in and then I hold them accountable, you know, and if they get stuck in between on the weeks, like they can send an email and I can, you know, be of help to them to sort of guide them in the right way. But it's about empowering them and not trying to make this like dependent relationship that you have. I remember when I was in therapy, but while I was going through that hard time that you were so there for me, like you were really very there for me at that point. Mm-hmm. But I remember my therapist, I'm like, so like, do I have you on retainer? I said to my therapist, I'd only seen her like five times. And this was like two years ago. And she was like, 2 years ago, actually. And she was like, no. She's like, I gave you the tools. Go use them. And if you get stuck, come see me again. Yeah. She's like, and that's how it works. Mm. And like, I know that like, that's what resonates with me. And like, that's the kind of work I do. Like, I'm looking to empower the people. The same with my cleanse. It's like, you come to my house, I teach you how to do the recipes. We talk about food. I show you all different hacks, how to make a smoothie really quickly, what things will always totally go together, different herbs and adaptogens that will kind of help you out. And then you go on your way. Mm. And you do it yourself so that you're no longer dependent on someone else. And like, with that, all the decisions that you make become better. Because when you start to take care of different parts of you, it shows up in everything, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you start to eat well, you usually also start to choose better company. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're listening to like, you know, for me, I was going to a yoga studio for a while, and I realized like I was coming up and like I was like riled up and like not feeling peaceful at all. And I recognized for me, even though I loved music during yoga, this particular studio was like playing very aggressive yoga, like music.
Y7?
It doesn't matter the name of it.
Okay.
But it was like, you know, like rap culture and like bitch this. And I was like, whoa, like that is not what I want in my energy field right now. And
oh my
like,
God, so my favorite fucking yoga studio, by the way.
I'm not talking about that.
There's a place for everybody. Yes.
But I'm not talking about that yoga studio. I'm talking about a particular type of music for me that I'm noticing that I'm sensitive to right. at that point in time.
Bitch, please, music.
But do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I think that the more I'm taking care of myself, the more like when we were just talking about the music when I came over, I'm like, oh my God, that piano playing is like massaging my soul. Mm. That, doing yoga too, sounds really fucking juicy. But listening to I'll Kill That Bitch, Whop Him in the Face.
Oh, come on now.
For me.
What song is that? I'll Kill That Bitch, Whop Him in the Face.
I swear to God, it was this one particular class, and it was like all of that type of stuff. And honestly, to be honest with you, it just made me feel like a really stupid white lady. Mm. I was like, I am sitting in a yoga studio with all these white women.
Well, this is an interesting part of the conversation. Like, what does it mean to be a truly privileged white girl in 2017?
I'm incredibly blessed.
Yes.
And incredibly grateful. And in some ways, have a lot of guilt around that, you know, and feel like when I tell the story about how hard my childhood was because I had red hair, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me, Jamie? Like, people have real shit and you have no right. I do believe we all have our own problems, and I do believe that I had the right to feel sadness for all of that and the pain that I felt. I think that because I am so privileged, and I would be in every way possible, because it's not just that I'm privileged in a monetary sense. I'm also privileged in the sense that I'm surrounded by incredible love, mm-hmm. whether it be from my friends, whether it be from my family, my husband. I'm really, really fortunate and incredibly, incredibly abundant. But I think that it makes it more important for me to figure out how I can serve, right? And like how to know to serve. And like we still have self-worth. So it's not just like I want to serve and not make money to do it, because I think it's important to have self-worth. And I think it's important to like receive an exchange for a monetary exchange for the work that I do, because it's not like
validates everything.
Well, yeah, and it's also like, right, like yogically you're supposed to make money so that you can give. Well, me giving my father's money is not me giving. Mm-hmm. Me giving money that I earn giving is giving. Right. And I think that like the more that I earn for myself, the more I'll be able to give. Mm. And I also think that that's why I've always chosen this type of stuff that I do, because like I told you, one of the healers I went to and was like, well, you know, you've been royalty your whole life and in all your different lives.
Yeah, past lives, yeah.
In all my past lives. And she's like, and so you have this incredible guilt that you almost resent that. She's like, but instead it's because you were supposed, she's like, you are supposed to be of service in some way, and like you're supposed to be in these healing arts, and like you're of a higher spirit, and don't get caught in this idea of guilt that you have for having what you have.
Right.
Instead, serve as much as you can and still receive monetary benefit for that, and then continue to serve and continue to serve.
I love that.
Yeah.
That was a perfect answer to that question. When you hear the love bomb, what does it make you think of?
Your face.
That's an even better answer.
It makes me really happy, and it makes me very, very proud of this little 19-year-old boy that I met with, like, sparkles in his eyes and watching you do the things you do. And I remember when you were first talking about doing this and, like, how it was going to go and what you were going to do.
Yeah, because, like, even still today, the time that we spend together, it's very therapeutic. We come together and it's intense, and I tell you exactly what's going on in my life. You tell me what's going on in yours, and it's like a therapy session. And the therapist and client, like, it shifts depending on our energies, right? It can shift within 5 minutes. It could shift within fucking a year. Like it's spastic, but that's very much so our relationship.
Yeah. I don't know why this popped into my head, but I remember when you were getting sober. And I remember, like, one of the things that, like, I loved about Ginger Snaps, which is, like, one of the things that I miss is that we had A Course in Miracles. And we taught that every Monday for free.
It saved my life.
Yeah. And I remember you decided to go on a cleanse. I made him buy it.
The day that I went sober, I ordered a cleanse. Just almost 2.5 years ago.
Yep. And you also ordered a course, a copy of The Course in Miracles.
Yeah. I went and bought it at Barnes & Noble.
Yep. And I remember that moment so clearly. And I remember, like, I was in my old apartment. I just remember and I was still in the East Village then.
No. You were in West Village.
I was?
Yeah. Because that's where the class was that I came to. It was definitely West Village.
You came to the class? Really?
100%.
Okay. Well, anyway. Well, that makes sense because it was 2.5 years ago. But I remember knowing in that moment, like, this was the work I wanted to do, and still not recognizing that it was outside of Ginger Snaps, and I didn't have to have Ginger Snaps part of it. But, like, the things I was proud of with Ginger Snaps was, even though some of the times they were crazy, but my relationships with my staff and and the fact that most people came in, left much better than they came in, my employees.
Yeah.
And offering that Course in Miracles and, like, not requiring payment for it and just having it be the service that opened up a lot of people's lives. And this woman, Anne Marie, who teaches it, really helps people. And, like, she and I do workshops together. We just finished one. We're going to do another one. And it's like,
I'm in for the next one for sure.
You have to. It's so good.
I mean, you've definitely, like, you have in one way or another saved my life, like, a handful of times. I mean, when I was 19, when I got sober, like, you have always been an angel in my life. You've always been a devil in my fucking life, too. But for the most part, you've, like, you know, you've definitely helped feed the man, right? And I don't know. I love you for that. Thank you, really. And, like, I know that we will be in each other's lives forever in that way, shape, or form, you know?
I think that's part of what's also super beautiful about us is that, like, we don't have to see each other often, but we still have such profound
months can pass, and the second we see each other, it's like not a second has passed.
And, like, when 2 years ago, when I thought everything
was crumbling,
you were there in a minute to help me pick it up.
Like, you know? If I ever called and was like, "I need you right now," you would be there.
Yep, and everything gets dropped. And I think also, like, back to, like, my relationship with Will and you, like, part of what I think is so beautiful is that you honor it and you respect it and you get it. And
it took a little bit for me.
Yeah.
It took a little bit of time for me to really wrap my head around it. But at this point, like, it's not that much different than what Will looks at you and says about your spirituality. Like, I believe in you. I love you. Therefore, I love it.
Right. I was trying to explain that to him last night, actually, because after I left you, I was like, "Oh, I just came from dinner with Nico, and we did Reiki," and he was like, "Oh, really?" And he was livid. but he was livid because I didn't share it with him beforehand, and, like, I didn't know that we were going to go to dinner, and, like, I was like trying to explain to him that it's like, A, there's nothing to worry about, you know, and, like, that you, I'm like, Nico loves you. I'm like, because he thinks you're incredible. The fact that, like, you put me in my place, I'm like, I think he finds amazing.
Girl, I've been trying to do it for years.
I'm like, and the fact that he knows how much I love you, that in of itself makes him love you because you make me happy. I'm like, and he would never, ever try to disrespect that or want to disrespect that. Mm. And then I remember, like, when I was first dating him and he was, like, being torturous and annoying the shit out of me at that one point where, like, I was, like, ready for it. And, like, we were basically together, but he wouldn't call me his girlfriend. Mm. I remember sitting on the steps by in the East Village by 9th Street Espresso, and I'm on the phone with you. And I'm like, this motherfucker. I'm like, you know, he just, like, won't call me his girlfriend. Yeah. And you were like, Jamie, I've called many women my girlfriend before and cheated on them and treated them like shit. You're like, he treats you like, granted, you were very young back then. And he was like, he treats you like how any girl would want to be treated. And so just know that you don't need the title and just be in that. And that is what helped us too, for me to just have peace at the level we're at until.
Have you ever told him that story?
Millions of times. I'm like, he's the one who told me not to go crazy. I'm like.
I love that. Okay, what does it mean to love yourself today?
I think it means to accept yourself, to, like, see those flaws in you and love them. And, like, all the scars and all the different stories that we see in the mirror, instead of being angry with them, be thankful for the lessons that they taught us and be super grateful for the place that we're on and just continue to commit to learn and grow and continuously love yourself throughout the way, if that makes sense.
And what is love?
Love is a warm, fuzzy feeling. love is undefinable. Mm. You know, it's something so big and so large and takes so many different versions.
I mean, it's the essence of your work. It's the essence of my work.
Yeah, like, I don't know that you could ever define it because there are so many versions of it.
I got it. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
This is the answer. And this is how this podcast is going to end. I'm going to first say I love you. Thank you for coming in today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Love is... 39.
I knew you were going to say that.
Spreading that love around. This is the love bomb. This is the show.
Look, Jamie Graber, I love you so much. 39. First and foremost, to everybody that is listening to this episode, I want you all to adopt a little bit of the magic that is 39. If any of you see 39 out in the world, whether it be a license plate, an address, numbers on a building, whatever, wherever, clock it, recognize it, and see it. That is magic. If for any reason you want to take a picture of it and send it to me in a DM, I would love it so much. I'm sure Jamie would too. Send it to her Instagram as well. And hey, look, if you need some help, right? If you're looking for a spiritual coach, if you're living fear-based right now and want to have some breakthroughs, reach out to Jamie. She's totally available. She is taking new clients right now, and she is the help. Straight up, she has helped me my entire life. Well, as long as we've known each other. But, yo, the time is now. You know what to do and when to do it. Reach out to Jamie. OrganicallyJamie.com. That's OrganicallyJamie.com. And her Instagram is OrganicallyJamie. Jamie, I love you, girl. 39 forever.
This is the love bomb. Spreading that love around. This is the love bomb. This is the show.
Thanks again to our partner, Spoke, SiriusXM's new app that allows you to listen to podcasts, radio programs, documentaries, curated specifically just for you. Go to hearspoke.com/at will. That's HEARSPOKE.com/ATWILL right now.